You're listening to Wolves Potluck.
And hey, welcome to Books and Boba, a book club and podcast featuring books by Asian and Asian American authors. My name is Marvin Yue.
And I'm Rira Yu.
And we are here for our March 2026 mid-month book news check-in, where we highlight some of the latest publishing announcements for books by Asian authors, as well as take a look at what's going on in book news. As always, Books and Boba is supported in part by our listeners. So if you've been enjoying our podcast and want to become a bigger part of our book club, head on over to patreon.com/booksandboba, where as an official Patreon supporter, you can access to our members-only Discord server. We can chat with us and fellow members in real time about all sorts of topics, including our monthly book club picks. And if you join us at the Honey Boba level, you also gain access to our monthly bonus podcast, Boba Chats, as well as the opportunity to help us pick a member's choice book club pick once per quarter. And our upcoming book club pick for April is a patron's choice. So if you join now, you will automatically get the opportunity to vote for next month's book club pick as a Honey Boba member. So definitely appreciate everyone who supported us so far, and hopefully see more of you guys there as well. But yeah, let's get into it. We are here to discuss the book news of the month. And as always, we're going to start off with the latest publishing announcements for books by Asian authors. This list is, as always, generated by Rira through sources like Publishers Weekly and various social media and online accounts. So as always, thanks to Rira for putting in the work. And yeah, let's get into it. Rira, what is our first book deal?
Penguin Workshop bought The Carlton Girls, Casey and the Cruel Thief, first in a four-book cozy middle-grade mystery series by Julie Abe. The series follows four girls who solve mysteries from their New York City high-rise. In book one, Casey and her ex-best friends must find a thief and kidnapper who is terrorizing their Upper West Side apartment building. Publication for books one and two are set for spring 2027. Book three will come out in that summer, and book four will come out in spring 2028. Julie Abe, we've had her on the show before. She is the author of Eva Evergreen, Semi-Magical Witch, and also our past book club pick, The Charmed List. So we're really used to seeing her do like cozy magical fantasy genre, and this is not that. This is like full on mystery, and they're catching a kidnapper. So
yeah, it's giving
a pivot.
I mean, I actually never actually read Hardy Boys, but it's
I've read Hardy Boys. Yeah, it is kind of similar.
It's giving those vibes, right? But like, you know, a group of girls in Upper West Side, New York. So also giving a little Only Murders in the Building. I don't know if you have seen that show before.
I've seen it. Yeah. Is that the one with the podcast? Like,
yeah,
they're all
the
into a true crime podcast, and they all live in the same building. Yeah. Okay. Got it. Because there's another show where it takes place in a building, and they're like ghost hunters, and it's also about dead people. So I was like, wait, is it that show? But yeah, I was thinking about the right one.
Yeah.
This sounds really fun. Again, Julie is a friend, and I do adore her writing. So I'm really excited that she got such a big book deal. It's a series.
Yeah, it's always cool to see authors that we like not only pulling the deals, but also branch out to other genres too. I'm really interested to see what a Julie Abe cozy mystery will read like. And I'm sure, you know, she is actually my niece's, like one of my niece's favorite authors. So I'm excited to like have more Julie Abe books out in the world. Upper West Side is like that's a fancy area of New York, right?
No, that's Upper East Side. I guess the upper sides of Manhattan are fancy. It's just a fancier one. Like when we think of Gossip Girl, it's Upper East Side.
And Upper West is like Columbia. That's where Columbia is, right?
Yeah, Columbia is in Upper West. Yeah.
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 I do remember like my Columbia friends always coming down to like where the NYU kids were, because they're like, there's nothing to do up there. And I'm like,
it's all brownstones, right?
Yeah. I'm just like, you guys live where like the privileged are, the rich people are. Yeah, of course it's like quiet and there's like nothing to do over there. I'm pretty sure it's changed because it's been a number of years now. But
yeah. Well, congrats to Julie on her new series. All right. Next up, Random House has acquired at an 8-imprint auction Roshani Chokshi's middle grade fantasy, The Good Folk Family, and its sequel. Chokshi's return to middle grade follows two half-fae sisters who sneak back into fairy in order to reconcile their father, the exiled prince of fairy, with his royal family. But families are tricky, and fairy ones even more so, and the sisters must reckon with the marvels and manipulations of a world forbidden by their parents for a reason. Publication is planned for spring 2027.
Roshani Chokshi is the author of the Arusha series. That's the middle grade fantasy series that was mentioned in the book deal. She's also the writer of The Gilded Wolves, The Star-Touched Queen, A Crown of Wishes. You know, fantasy is her bread and butter. And it's not surprising that she's diving into the fae world. I wouldn't say I feel like the fae world has been in vogue for a very long time. There's like a whole like subgenre of it in romanticy.
Yeah, especially dark romanticy, right? It's all about like long-lived fairy princes who are like kind of dark and mysterious and also kind of terrifying, right?
Yeah, Sarah J. Maas's A Court of Thorns and Roses, that is like pretty much the staple of fae romance. So and she's coming out with like a new book this year. So, I mean, like not Asian American related, but it is a very book, like,
yeah,
very TikTok, like big
the TikTok
book
people
news.
Are very, very happy about, very excited about that from what I gather.
But I'm just saying that like the fairy genre, it's fairy subgenre. It is very popular with the readers.
Yeah. This also reminds me of like a very like Asian American type of story, which is like a parent who like cut ties with their parents, with their homeland, with their, you know, culture for a reason. And the children, not having that cultural tether, tries to find like a way to reconnect, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I was really impressed that this was an 8-imprint auction. A lot of publishing houses really wanted this book. So congratulations to Random House for acquiring it. I mean, it's one of the big five. So
a lot of money
not surprised,
yeah.
But it just means that it was a very much sought after manuscript. So congratulations to Roshani.
Yeah.
All right. Our next book deal is Macmillan, Balzer and Bray bought in a preempt North American rights to P.S. Are We Friends Now? By real life friends John Hsu and Jasmine Warga. Told in alternating letters by two middle graders who are assigned to each other as pen pals, it's the story of how they write their way through easy lies and hard truths, and ultimately learn to show up for one another. Publication is set for fall 2027.
This is cute. So I'm assuming, so I'm guessing each author is responsible for one of the characters, right? And they're just writing letters to each other. This is I wonder if this started as like a writing exercise and turned into like a book.
Yeah, I wonder if they were also like pen pals at one point.
Yeah.
But I think you're right. It probably originated from being writer friends sending things back and forth.
I mean,
did you have a pen pal at any point?
Did your school make
you do that?
We were, so when I was in third grade, my third grade teacher, Mrs. Stevenson, her husband also taught third grade at a different elementary school in our district. So we were assigned a pen pal from the other classroom, and you know, looking back, it's probably easy to exchange letters when like the two teachers, when our teachers live together, right? But I feel like how does that work in this day and age? Is it just emails? Or are they still sending snail mail, right? Like, do kids even know how to send snail mail or write a letter?
I mean, I think pen pals now are just group chats or DMs. Like, I feel like just reaching out to a stranger in a different part of the world is so easy now that like the concept of pen pals has kind of become obsolete. You're just friends.
Yeah.
It's not like an exercise anymore.
So I wonder if this will be like a period piece, right? Like the 90s or 2000s, right before the proliferation of email.
Or maybe teachers are teaching their kids, like,
maybe
this is how you send mail. Because I do remember like my teachers teaching us that, being like, this is how you write a letter, like the formatting. This is how you like mail it with like where you put the address and put the stamp on. So maybe it's like one of that, getting the kids introduced to letter writing.
But I do like the idea of like an epistolary novel for middle grade readers, right? I think that was something that when I was starting off as a reader, whenever I found a book that used a different format, it was always really interesting. I remember reading a book once that was written like a screenplay. And that was the first time kind of reading something in that format. And I think, you know, if we want to teach our readers to like be open to different styles and genres, like this is a good, like it's good to expose them to different types of storytelling as well.
I'm just thinking how like Gen Alpha and like older, I mean, older Gen Alpha and younger Gen Z talk in writing. They'll be like, hey, chat. I just like, if this was taking place in like present day, like how would that translate into actually writing on a letter? I'm very curious.
Yeah, I guess we'll find out in 2027.
Yeah.
All right. Well, congrats to John and Jasmine on the book deal. Next up, Ink Pop has bought My Neighbor Yokai by Noho, a middle grade contemporary fantasy manga series with an anime adaptation on Crunchyroll. At the age of 20, Buchio the house cat sprouts a second tail and becomes a cat spirit. Curious about why, he decides to take a journey of self-discovery joined by various spirits and human companions. Publication will begin in spring 2027. Now, is this a manga series that's already in development that's being translated to English?
I think that might be the case. This manga series became serialized online through Twitter back in 2017. So it's been around for a while, and it's really interesting to see it kind of transform into different forms of like narrative storytelling. So there's like the anime, there's the manga, and then
I think there's a growing pipeline that starts from like web novel / webtoon to actual like published serialized manga / comics to anime adaptation to film.
Yeah. All right, next up, Scholastic bought Mia Kayla's YA debut, Fall in Love, a coming-of-age romance set in a picture-perfect New England town in which a rule-following orchid girl's world is upended when her first love returns to work on her family's struggling farm, forcing her to risk her plans and her heart to save what really matters. Publication is planned for fall 2027.
So I'm guessing this takes place in the autumn?
Yes. I mean, when we think of New England, it's autumn, right?
Yeah, this feels like a very vibey romance, right? Lots of falling leaves, lots of...
I don't know why, but it's giving me like Hallmark vibes or Lifetime romance vibes, because it's like, it sounds like it's a small town, like Gilmore Girls, you know, kind of like neighborhood. You have like a first love like returning, and I mean,
it does have all the hallmarks, right? It has the rule-following, straight shooting main character, and you have like the person who left town coming back. They're like, you know, I've lived in the city, now I'm like all sophisticated, and then, you know, falling in love with, it's not Christmas, but you know, with like small townness, right?
Yeah, but this is a YA story, so it's definitely not, you know, that level of like Lifetime movie stories, because it's like how can you like, because usually like the characters, they've been gone for like a number of years doing like some city job, and then they come back into town because they're burnt out or whatever. So I don't know, maybe it's like college, maybe
yeah,
who knows.
Well, congrats to Mia on her debut. All right, next up, Simon Schuster has bought The Gravedigger's Apprentice, a middle grade debut by Linda Chang. Pitched as Tomb Raider meets Ghostbusters, it's an action-adventure set in the criminal underworld of 1930s China, where a young grave robber must team up with her rival to plunder a haunted tomb in order to save her adopted family from the clutches of a corrupt army officer. Publication is slated for summer 2027.
I know they say it's like Tomb Raider meets Ghostbusters, but I'm getting mad mummy vibes.
I love that it takes place in 1930s China, which as readers, longtime listeners will know, it's one of my favorite vibes of story, because 1930s China is all about, think like lots of like snazzily dressed people, lots of like jazz and jazz clubs. It's like just really cool, like think like post-war LA, like those types of like vibes. And yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to like the Chinese tinge supernatural stuff that's definitely gonna show up, right?
Yeah, I mean the Chinese take their you know, like ancestral rites and like ghosts and like like Hungry Ghost festivals and all that like very seriously. So yeah. The fact that like these guys are like, let's go rob a tomb. I'm like, yeah. aren't you afraid of being cursed? But I guess you know that there's a whole story to that. Yeah, this sounds really fun, and I feel like this is something that you would probably give to your kids once they're older. Because it has like history and it's like your type of setting.
And it doesn't seem too scary. It seems more fun. Like the Mummy's not like the Mummy has scary parts in it, but it's mostly just like a fun action adventure, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I saw the Mummy when I was a kid. I was definitely not supposed to. So, you know, like kids consume media that's like way too old for them all the time. But I do recommend, you know, you reading it before you give it to your kids, Marvin. Yeah, because you don't know. Maybe it might be too scary for them.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, Union Square Kids bought world rights to Seeking Wonderful, written by Susan Yoon and illustrated by Veronica Meng. This picture book is about a rock and a mysterious creature who pass their days in the desert, imagining wonderful but seemingly impossible destinies. Together, they hatch a plan to fulfill their dreams, but can they succeed? Publication is set for summer 2028.
I don't know why, but I'm just thinking of that one scene from Everything Ever All at Once where Michelle Yeoh and Stephanie Soo both become rocks.
With googly eyes?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think, like, what a mysterious creature in the desert would be. I'm going, like, towards, like, mythical creatures.
Oh, I was thinking, like, a salamander.
Oh, salamander?
But
I mean, are like salamanders maybe, like mysterious?
No, but they're a desert creature. Maybe one of those, what was that giant bird from the Fauna Lee novella we read? A rock? Maybe a rock. That'd be cool.
What if it was like the dune worm?
Oh. Yeah.
Maybe it's because my mind's just been there lately with like the Timothée Chalamet like takedown, and it's just like, oh. Dune worm.
I mean, this book's already playing with metaphysical things, right? Where a rock and a creature imagine wonderful things in the desert. So a dune worm might not be out of the realm of possibility.
Also, like my LA brain went into like desert Coachella. That's like the first thing that pops up now when I think about the desert, because all of my friends who go to Coachella, they're like, oh, we're going to the desert. And there's only one reason why you go to the desert, and it's for Coachella. I don't think these characters are going to be imagining Coachella, but the idea of that is very funny to me.
Yeah. Well, congrats to Susan and Veronica on their book deal. Okay, next up, in an exclusive submission, Quiltry has bought We Are the Light, A Story of Diwali by Newbery Honor author Rajani LaRocca and illustrated by Saya Mukherjee. The book is a tribute to Diwali and takes readers through the preparations for the Festival of Lights, as well as celebrates the holiday's meaning. Publication is planned for fall 2026.
Yeah, more Diwali representation. I feel like for the longest time, the only books on Asian holidays was Chinese New Year. So, well, really glad that we're getting more representation.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've been getting a lot more Diwali. We've been getting I think recently there was a Holi book, right? The Festival of Colors. And we've also been getting a lot of like
Ramadan books as well.
Ramadan, yeah. So
yeah,
it's cool to see.
But it's like a new trend. It's not like it hasn't been there for a long time, you guys. Like,
yeah.
It has been like a brick by brick. We are building a catalog of Asian holidays that is not Chinese New Year.
Yeah, and I feel like we also need, like, we've been seeing a lot more non-Lunar New Year Chinese holiday books, too, right? We've been seeing a lot more, like, we've been seeing some Qingmingjie, like, tomb sweeping. We've been seeing some Mid-Autumn. You know, I'm going to have to teach my kids our culture at some point, and I'm glad to have picture books at the ready to illustrate that for me, because I don't know about you, but I didn't really pay a lot of attention growing up to whatever remnants of our cultural heritage festivals that my parents passed down.
Yeah, I mean, I went to Korean school like during the weekends, and they did make us celebrate like a lot of the holidays, but they've kind of just went over my head. So yeah, I didn't really pay attention to it that much, unless it was like Chuseok or Seollal, you know.
Yeah.
Seollal is our Lunar New Year in Korean culture. So those are our two big holidays.
And much like American holidays, like Asian holidays, like our cultural holidays, the most important thing is knowing what to eat, because every holiday has its like signature food. And I think as long as I and like I definitely need help to figure out, to remind myself, like which one is the Tangyuan, which one is the Mochi Ball Festival, which one is the Glutinous Rice Festival, and which one is the Rice Cake Festival, right? And I'm sure
I know Diwali has like their own set of like cuisine that is like special for just that holiday.
Yeah.
Next up, Charles Bridge and Diane Early acquired world rights to Home is Waiting to Be Found, written by Tina Athade, illustrated by Vu Thuy Nokya. This picture book follows a child's migration experience as she continues to look for a place in the new city that feels like home. Publication is planned for fall 2027.
I think the fact that the description says migration means that this is like a big move, right? It's not just like a move from like a city to another city in the state, but this sounds like a move to another country, right?
Yeah, as someone who has moved a lot as a kid, I can totally relate to feeling lost and wanting to find a place to belong in a new city. I do wonder what city this is, or if it's just unnamed.
I mean, not that it really matters. City, right? Yeah. But, you know, like, yeah, is it a big city? Is it a small city? Is it a small town?
Again, are they coming from a really different country?
But it does, yeah. But I think in the end, like, no matter what, if you're a kid and you move to someplace new, it's going to feel big, right? It's going to feel like big and unfamiliar. And you're going to want to search for something that, like, you can latch onto that gives you a sense of safety, right? And I think that sounds like what this book is going for.
Yeah.
All right, next up, HarperCollins and Avon A has acquired world rights to Matcha and Matches by Kara Tanimachi. The YA novel follows a girl's summer in Japan at her estranged father's matcha cafe, battling his golden boy protege to prove that she's his rightful heir, until her sabotage backfires and she starts falling for her rival instead. Publication is scheduled for winter 2027.
Man, I'm just thinking back to our last Boba Chat episode where we're talking about I'm in my very Chinese time of my life, and how people like went through that with matcha, and how like people were buying so much matcha that like Japanese tea shops were running out of matcha. So we're going to the homeland.
Yeah, we've had Kara on the show before to talk about her novel The Second You're Single. She's like a prolific romance author, and I think this is like, I don't know if this is her YA debut, but the description is definitely like,
it's also Hallmark vibes.
Yeah, it's definitely giving like those rom-com vibes, right?
I have to say, like, just from a glance, the protagonist, the girl who's going to Japan to her estranged father's matcha shop, like her being like, I am your rightful heir. And I'm like, are you, like, you haven't really been talking to your dad, right? Like, bold of you to just assume that position. And especially when he already has like someone who is like, it's extremely good at his job. So that's like really interesting to me. That's a fun workplace rivals romance situation going on.
It's a classic Succession type of story, right? Who is the real heir? The blood related one, or the one that actually cares about the business and like lives and breathes it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just remembering, like, because I went to Japan around this time last year, and I did go to like a really famous matcha shop, and they have like different tiers of like how intense you want your matcha to be. Like, there's like milk matcha, like the very lightest green you can go with, and that's usually used in like ice cream and whatnot, and then the darkest matcha green, which is pretty much drinking grass, in my opinion. I don't have a very sophisticated taste palette when it comes to matcha, but people take it very seriously, and there was like a huge line and everything. So I can see being like, if you're, I guess I can see like if If your dad is like a matcha shop owner, you're just like, that's going to bring in money. Like, you need to get in on that.
You know, I wonder if she's also a self-proclaimed matcha expert from the States, right? Like someone who has
that
like,
too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who has like studied the art of matcha, but in like a American style cafe. And now that's like, it's my birthright. So definitely a lot of great setup for a rivals to lovers story here. And looking forward. I'm curious what the matches part of the title is. Like, is it like matches like fire or matches like matching online on dating, right?
Or is it, yeah, like, I mean, it could be like matcha battles, like in like culinary.
Like,
yeah.
True.
We're getting into like our anime nerddom right here. But yeah.
Yeah. So congrats to Kara on the book deal.
All right. Next up, Feywill and Friends bought Tea Leaves and Fate Strings, a cozy YA fantasy by C.B. Lee, author of Not Your Sidekick and Coffee Shop in an Alternate Universe. When a magical accident reveals strings of fate, a wandering mercenary demon finds herself learning the art of peace as she and her soulmate struggle to revive a floating tea house. Publication is set for spring or summer 2027.
And lots of tea house related book deals this month. Always great to see a new book by CB.
Yeah, last time we had her on the show, it was for a Clash of Steel, I think.
Yeah, now she's in a very I guess coffee house tea shop time of her life right now, right? With her last few books.
I do love how like cozy fantasy has kind of like been rising in popularity lately.
Yeah.
So much of high fantasy, it's so dense because they have to build a world, right? And like, it's also like quite depressing a lot of times because there's like war and politics. And sometimes you just want to know about the little guys running a coffee shop or a tea house.
And I feel like sometimes when you zoom in on like the more mundane side of like a fantasy world, you end up getting way more of that world building than you would with like zoomed out with like high with all the politics and
yeah, that's kind of how I felt with the Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, because that is like more mundane, like what a hedge knight goes through rather than like the dragon lords and all the high court politics involved.
I think there's something to be said about teaching people how to just chill and find the art of peace in this very hectic world we live in. So yeah, congrats on CB on her new book. I'm looking forward to learning more about it and looking forward to seeing the dope cover you'll probably get too. All right. Next up, Norton Young Readers bought in an exclusive submission, Laura G. Lee's picture book, The Red Thread, a reimagining of an ancient East Asian myth told as a celebration of sisters and their special bond. Publication is planned for winter 2027.
Another book about strings of fate.
Yeah, I growing up, I don't think I was ever taught the story of the red thread that connects us. It's more of something that I've read more recently in like, again, East Asian, like webtoons and other fantasy stories. I do like the idea of, you know, people being fated together. But there's also like, you know, not that this is the application in this book. This seems like a very like positive and wholesome application. But it can also be applied in like some very toxic ways, right? Like a very like what I imagine the Wuthering Heights relationships are. Like they all seem to be connected with like some effed up wrestling of fate, right?
Yeah. Imagine if your destined soulmate is someone who is very like toxic and horrible and you're forced to live all your lifetimes with them. Like that sounds horrible. For me, like I feel like I was introduced to the concept of like red threads of fate through like anime, because they always have like in like the anime openings, they always have like red strings in the background with like strings like tying the characters like pinkies together. You know, it's supposed to be like super cute, romantic, but like Marvin said, it could also take a darker turn. If your destined lover is not a good person. But this is a picture book and it sounds wholesome.
Yeah.
And I do like how it's not, obviously it's a picture book, so I don't think it's going to like show romance, but you know, like a celebration of sisters, you know, your siblings can be your soulmate. And they kind of are, because you spend your whole life with them. I think that's why, like, a lot of parents choose to make siblings for their kids, because they're like, oh, when we die, we want them to have someone. Not sure if that is the best way to have multiple children, the best reason to have multiple children, but
yeah.
it is quite a common reason.
Yeah, I mean, family connections can be complicated, but it's also sometimes comforting to know that there will be someone that you have, like, a relation to that you can rely on. And I do appreciate that this is a celebration of that bond through the red strings of fate. So yeah, congrats to Laura Lee on the book deal.
All right, so our final book deal is Union Square & Co. bought Scream Queen by Sujin Witherspoon, a YA rom-com thriller about rival cheerleaders whose brazen attempts to win over the quarterback results in his death. Forced to team up, they must bury the crime and their growing feelings for each other before someone unearths their secrets. Secrets they'd kill to keep hidden. Publication is scheduled for fall 2027. So we've read one of Sujin's books for a book club. It was Bingsu for Two.
Yeah, this is a totally different vibe from Bingsu for
Two. Yeah.
I love that it appears to be a sapphic rom-com where the two main characters are covering up a murder. Seems like a very cool twist on this trope.
Yeah. Oh my God. Like, I'm trying to remember what country it was, but it was one of, like, the Asian countries' version of The Bachelor, and two of the female contestants, you know, they ended up getting together with each other and, you know, didn't go after the guy, the bachelor. So it kind of reminds me of that situation where it's just like, why are we going after this man? But, you know, the man in this scenario is dead, so I yeah. guess you've killed your competition.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like it's a coming of age, right? Realizing that maybe the quarterback wasn't end game for us. It's just what society told us we wanted to get, but what we really wanted was in front of us the whole long.
Yeah, it's also giving me, like, Pretty Little Liars vibes because of, like, the whole secret scenario.
Yeah, I wonder, I'm curious about how the quarterback dies. Like, I'm sure it's going to be some, like, hilariously, like,
it has to be, like, over the top, obscene, like, almost comedic for this romance to work. Because otherwise, everybody's traumatized, and that's not really fun for romance. Trauma bonding is not the greatest way to get together with your destined lover.
But yeah, looking forward to how that all that shakes out. So congrats to Sujin on her book deal.
All right, so for our news, we have one big story. So Lee and Lo postponed their quadrennial diversity baseline survey in order to concentrate their efforts on fighting book bans. So we've quoted the diversity baseline survey that Lee and Lo releases in past episodes. It first came out in 2015. So it came out a year before we started this podcast. Jason Lowe is the force behind this survey. He is a publisher and co-owner of Lee and Lowe Books, which is the largest multicultural children's book publisher in the U.S. Yeah, so they're very equipped in collecting data from other imprints on, you know, the diversity of their staff, like how many writers of color are working in their imprint, how many editors, how many executives are of color, are of the LGBTQIA community. So it's a very important survey. So recently in his Publisher Weekly op-ed, Jason Lowe wrote, "As far as books for children go, the diversity movement is by and large in limbo. In the face of extreme censorship that targets diverse authors and titles, our first priority as publishers must shift toward continuing to publish and sell diverse books for children in contentious times. The second priority is to redirect the time and effort we would have spent on DBS 4.0 and channel it toward the fight to ban book bans. Substantial damage has been done to the book ecosystem due to the major increase in book bans. While publishers have been impacted, the cascade effect has manifested itself in diverse creators not being invited to do school visits, school purchasing decisions being frozen, and librarians not being able to perform their jobs. This is definitely true. I have heard some horror stories from queer authors and also writers of color being pulled out of their speaking engagements at school, like very last minute, because parents have protested saying like, oh, I don't like that your book has like a gay character or a character of color. Like, I don't want my kids to be reading stuff like that. So they get pulled last minute. Because librarians are fighting book bans and there's so few of them working, they're very short-staffed. All of their efforts have just kind of been funneled into not getting fired and not getting hurt by the groups that are trying to harm them. So it is very tiring that, you know, they have to do this fight over and over again.
Yeah, I mean, it does represent something that we've been concerned about as a book club that specifically features books by Asian American authors, because those are exactly the books that get affected, right? It took us so long to get this point where like we have like even enough books to fill up one of these book news episodes every month, even though in the grand scheme of things it's just a drop in the bucket in terms of like the total number of books being published every month, right? And you know, even though there are still book deals coming in, I feel like it doesn't take much for companies to, you know, switch up their strategy, right? Like we see this with like a lot of companies like dismantling their DEI programs just because it's like not popular with the current ruling government. And that's like decades of work being like dismantled overnight.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking at Lee and Lou's last survey that was done 2023. So I'm looking at the industry overall survey. You can filter it by like executive level, editorial, marketing, like different departments. It says that 7.8% of the industry overall are Asian and Native Hawaiian and Pacific Islander descent. That is still very small compared to the 72.5% of the workforce being white. And when you look at also like the data on gender and disability, it's still very like, it's not very diverse. And yeah, they've been doing this survey since 2015. And the fact that we have, this is progress, is still kind of shocking because, you know, you and I are kind of in this bubble where we're like exposed to Asian and Asian American authors. And, you know, we keep tab on news, but like you said, it's a drop in the bucket. And it's really easy to forget that. And I think a lot of people who have complained about writers of color and writers from the queer community taking their spots in the industry, I think they are looking at like the rise in numbers and saying, hey, they're taking my spot, like they don't deserve it. And I'm like, no, they're just making the table bigger. Yeah. No one is stealing chairs.
It's that classic line, right? Like for people who have always been in power or people who've always enjoyed privilege, like equality feels like oppression. And it's like there's so many different factors going into like why this is happening, but a lot of it stems from the fact that like, you know, DEI or diversity advocacy, the goal is equality. The goal is equity, right? We know that like equality might be like too hard to ever achieve, but like small things to like make things more equitable, like moving the needle little by little, like can feel huge for people who have never had like that kind of exposure before, right? And a lot of us also like just our elected officials or people in power are just, it feels like they're very craven. They're very cowardly. Like they're so afraid of offending that they're willing to like take on kind of like very flashy stances in the name of like being fair and balanced, right? Like, oh, we don't want to make the white parents who feel like their kids shouldn't be learning about slavery uncomfortable. So now we're going to ban those books. And it's like, no, that's not the solution here. Like, it might sound like you're being fair to those parents, but that's a pretty like effed up stance to have. And like, it's not like classic literature is like that much like less explicit about things. Like Great Gatsby is about partying and drinking, right? Like, there's a lot of stuff going on, even on those older books. A lot of them outdated too.
I mean, capitalism is eternal. So
yeah,
like, books like The Great Gatsby and Jungle. Yeah, I mean, they're still relevant to this day. But definitely there are books that are outdated in the reading curriculum. And it's really unfortunate that teachers and librarians, you know, they're trying to update it. They're trying to get books that reflect their classrooms, and they have to put so much effort into like just the paperwork. And it's just like, we could all be doing better things right now.
Yeah.
It's just a waste of everyone's time. I'm just thinking, even some of the books I read in my time in like middle school and high school, I guess they would be considered liberal in these parents' eyes, because, you know, I read books that take place during like the Holocaust and during like Japanese internment. And I'm just like, that's history. And if you're saying that that's too extreme for your kids to learn, then I don't know. It's a problem that we are seeing in real time, like how like the education system has failed our kids and how they have grown up to be how some of them have grown up to be young adults who are very anti-intellectual. And it's like, okay, we have no one to blame except ourselves, and we're just making things a lot harder.
Yeah, and I feel like this is not an issue that's going to go away. We're going to keep running into, I mean, book bans have been going on. Like, it's a battle we've been fighting for like almost a decade now, I feel like. And it's only getting worse, I think. So I think definitely something that we'll be keeping an eye on as a book club podcast. You know, hopefully we can get some people on the show to talk more in depth about like policy, as well as ways that, you know, we as normal people can help fight against the book bans as well. Yeah, I mean, not to end it on a bummer note, but yeah, it is good to see that people are fighting. People are leading the way, because the worst thing that could happen is if no one, like everyone just rolls over and accepts it. And, you know, I can't accept a world where I can't read books by different people, you know, like I don't want to read the same perspective every day. You know, this is how we end up with the future where all literature is just AI slop, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to keep doing our part here at Books and Boba to highlight books by diverse authors of Asian descent. And, you know, hopefully that helps. But yeah, I guess on that note, that'll do it for this episode of Books and Boba. Thank you so much for joining us for our March 2026 mid-month book news check-in. Mira, before we go, can you remind us what book we are reading for book club this month?
All right. So our March book club pick, which was, you know, my pick, is Butter by Asako Yuzuki, and it is a Japanese bestseller about a female gourmet cook and convicted serial killer, and a journalist who is interviewing them in prison. So I guess this is like a good melding of Marvin and my taste, because Marvin is really into culinary tales, and I'm really into murder and true crime. So yay.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a book that really understands what it is about food that makes foodies tick, right? And surprisingly, the book is also in conversation with like other books that we've read in this book club, including Kim Ji Young, born 1982, in which it follows the main character is kind of, he starts out the book very much conformed in what society wants her to be. And through her conversation with this convicted serial killer, kind of comes out of her shell and kind of questions like the societal gender norms that has been imposed on her. So definitely a very interesting read. We're having a great time discussing it on our Discord. And, you know, if you are a Patreon supporter, make sure to get on Discord to join us in our discussion of the book. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to talking about this one with you at the end of the month.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
All right. Well, with that, that'll do it for this episode of Books and Boba. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you all next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Books and Boba. This podcast was hosted by Marvin Yue and Ri Ryu and edited and produced by Marvin Yue. Follow the book club on Twitter and Instagram by going to @BooksandBoba and engage with us on Goodreads on our Goodreads group. You can also check out past episodes of the podcast by going to booksandboba.com and by subscribing to us on your favorite podcast app. Don't forget, you can support Books and Boba and Asian American authors by purchasing books at our bookshop.org account. Check out the link in our show notes and also at booksandboba.com. Books and Boba is a proud member of the Potluck Podcast Collective, a collective of Asian American hosted podcasts featuring unique voices and stories from the Asian diaspora. Learn more about the collective and check out our fellow Potluck shows by visiting the website podcastpotluck.com. Thanks for listening.
Hey, sports fans. Welcome to Asians in Hockey. You may not realize it, but there's a rich history of Asians and AAPI folks who have contributed to the legacy of the greatest game on ice. From classic legends like Julie Chu and Robin Bawa, to current greats like Lia Lum and Nick Suzuki, and even rising stars like Akane Shiga and Jason Robertson. We'll cover their stories, celebrate their accomplishments, and learn about their impact on the sport of hockey. I'm Nate Nakao, former beer league player, occasional youth hockey coach, and longtime hockey fan, and I'll be your host as we take a look at the rise of Asians in hockey. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Casts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Part of the Potluck Podcast Collective.
Hungry for spicy food and even hotter conversations? Craving community and authentic storytelling? Then join the table. This is Minor Legends, a new comedy fiction podcast supported by Potluck. Pull up every week with me, Angela Wong Carbone, and follow the stories of me and my friends as we serve up tasty tales of what it means to be Asian American at our weekly dinner hang. If you enjoy deep dishing on absurd stereotypes like tiger moms who tutor your dating game rather than grades, the insanity of your parents' immigration story, to the legend of that one good Asian cousin you can never live up to, then pull up a seat and grab a plate. Featuring dinner guests like Ronnie Chang, Brian Park, Usama Siddiqui, Celia Au, Perry Young, Supriya Ganesh, and more. It's a tasty rotation that'll leave you belly laughing and steeped in relatable and spicy conversations. Can you take the heat? Listen now for free wherever you get your podcasts.